And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Talk, Stan.
Oh,
you're on the air.
That was a nice introduction. We ought to keep this engineer.
We've only had that introduction for the past 5 years,
yeah,
but who
the
cares?
Engineer, he seems to know what he's doing.
Well, we have Greg. Say hello, Greg.
Fire the other guy.
Hello.
Yeah.
The guy you took off today. Or maybe went to the beach or whatever.
You just like men with beards. I know you.
Anyway, this is Stan Weisleder on The View from Over Here, broadcasting from podcasting from the Mark Rao Studio in downtown Burbank. And with me today on my right.
Wait. Before you introduce it, where can we be heard?
We can be heard all over the world, whenever you want. All you have to do is tune in Malcolm Digital Radio at anytime, wherever, .com, no .com, whatever. You could be sitting on the can doing whatever, whatever, wherever.
Okay, enough. Introduce our guest.
All right. On to my immediate right, Jamie Nutella, who's been with us once before, and she is a very well-known producer, and she is going to talk today about her latest project, which was on Hallmark this past Sunday, I missed because I was watching something else, but it had the star in it. Okay, and that was...
Had two of the stars.
Ray Donovan. Anyway, and to her right is Malcolm Berman, my producer, and Abel Wingman.
Yeah.
He asked me one time what a wingman is. You don't know? Forget about it.
I love chicken wings.
Fine. Yeah,
that's a wingman, right, Jamie?
That's a wingman. In L.A., that would be a wingman.
Jamie, tell us, what have you been up to? You've been traveling, I know, with your family, without your family. Tell us about your trials and tribulations. What's been happening since we saw you last?
Well, let's see. It's been a roller coaster since the last time I saw you. I obviously graduated from set producer to executive producer, which I'm very happy about.
Wow.
Yeah, I was happy to get that title, you know, because lots of times I take co-producer credit. And then if something were to happen where, you know, any kind of nomination or any kind of entry into an awards ceremony, you don't really get, the co-producer doesn't really get aligned with the producer and executive
nothing.
Producer. Yeah.
So
I was finally happy that I was able to... you know, have that opportunity to be involved in this great, you know, Hallmark movie. And I just found out it's called JL Family Ranch, and it starred John Voight and Melanie Griffith and Jimmy Kahn. And Stephen Bauer was in it, and Trevor Donovan, and so many more. Skylar Shea, who I'm a big fan of.
Well, you have some heavy-duty pros in there.
We did.
Jamie, I saw the trailer.
Yes.
I would like for you to tell everybody out there what is the story about, and also tell us what you did to make it happen. What were your functions?
Well, let's see. The story is about two families that have are arch rivals, and they're arch rivals because they have a lot of family history together. They grew up in a small town, and they're two powerful families in this small community. It takes place on a farm, and JL Family Ranch actually stands for John Lindbergh, which is played by John Voight, and his rivalry is actually Jimmy Kahn. And his character, the two of them have family history together, and it's about, you know, a piece of land that they're in a fight over. And in the end, you know, John Lindbergh's family is very righteous and does the right thing. And obviously there are bad guys and good guys. And I liked it because it was a clean story. You know, you see like a lot of I go to the movies and I turn on TV now, and there's all these visual effects and aggressiveness. And sometimes they make me very tense. And this was a good old family ranch story.
Were there any love stories involved? Like, it sounds almost like Romeo and Juliet.
Yes, Terry Polo, who I forgot to mention.
Oh.
This is my second project working on with. We were lucky enough to be in Alaska together for a year
and
work on Beyond.
Just the two of you?
No, we were on Beyond, a movie called Beyond, and Joseph Resnick directed it, and Stephen Paul produced it along with
Stephen
John
Paul,
Voight.
That name is familiar.
Dermot Mulroney was in it as well. Yes. It's nice to be able to work with actors that you've worked with in the past because you feel like you know how they are on set. You can adjust.
No, we don't know. You tell us how they are on set.
Well, Terry Polo is hilarious because the first time I ever worked with her, when we were on set the first day, she would say to some of the crew members, you know, I really like your scarf. Can I have it? And I think people were like, what? You know, and so by the end of the show, she did this every day till the end of the show. And at the end of the show, at the wrap, you know, after Martini Shot, after we wrapped everything, she came back with a whole, like, pile of stuff from jewelry to rings to books to, you know, at the time there were CDs, you know. And it was hilarious because I said, what are you doing with all that stuff? She goes, listen, you guys. I was joking with you all the way through. I would say a compliment, you know, I would compliment you on something you liked and don't give it up, you know.
So she had the chutzpah to actually say, Malcolm, I like that T-shirt you're wearing. Can I have it?
It's true. And she would actually, like, provoke reactions out of people.
Actually, she probably wasn't getting paid that much, so she had
yeah. Actually, she got a – she was nicely paid on that. That was a nice budget project.
Then the J.R. – when you say J.R., I think, isn't that part of the Dallas script, the J.R. Ewing?
It is. It is. Very different. Very different.
We didn't have that.
But we had fantastic talents in it, though.
It was not a soap opera. Like the other one that Malcolm referred to.
Dallas. Okay.
Dallas.
Yeah, yep. it was a nice soap opera.
Yeah, but you know what? All those type of family-oriented movies, you know, in the end, they're all kind of a little bit of soap opera.
Was this anything like the Hatfields and the McCoys?
Without the
not
violence.
As much, not as much. But we did have some ranch hands that had guns and, you know, there were a lot of, stories on set. We filmed on an enormous farm that was, just beautiful. It was breathtaking. Actually, I think it was the people who owned, Jack Daniels. It was the Jack Daniels whiskey family.
It was a fun set, huh?
Yeah, it was fantastic. I wish we had that overnight, but we didn't.
It was filmed in Kentucky, but it didn't take place in Kentucky. It takes place someplace further out west?
In Texas. I believe Hallmark promoted it as Texas. Yes.
Okay, the trailer I don't think mentioned. It didn't.
I think on Hallmark's Family Channel website they.
Okay.
Well, yes. To Texas is an open gun state. You can carry sidearms.
I believe it is, which is really upsetting,
open,
to be honest.
You can't have it concealed.
Yes.
In fact, the first time I was in Nevada, I was at a supermarket getting some stuff. And the guy in front of me was packing like a .45 in the holster with the bullets and everything like you'd see in an old cowboy movie. And I thought the guy was a cop or whatever. And I'm looking at this guy. I'm like, what's going on here? And the cash register, she saw that I was getting a little anxious. And she says, it's okay. It's an open carry state. And I found out later that, there are some states carry whatever you like except a bazooka. Okay.
You can't carry a bazooka?
Maybe you can, as long as you show it. You can't hide it under your clothing.
But anyway, getting
that's
back
scary.
To,
you think people actually walk around with? I'm a firm believer that I think there should be more protection around our laws about.
So are you all for the Second Amendment or?
That's a misnomer.
Wishy-washy.
The Second Amendment was made for a militia. It wasn't meant for individuals. It was because they were afraid of the federal government getting too much power.
You mean like now?
Well,
you admit the federal government is getting – well, we're getting away from the subject.
We're going to get into political
government.
What happens after? The show was on, made the first run at Hallmark?
Yes, and
Now where does it go?
Well, they'll probably run it again. I know that we've just gotten greenlit for JL Family Ranch 2, so I'm really excited to be a part
of
that.
Please send me an email when the first part is going to run again.
I absolutely will.
I have to see it.
I absolutely will.
Then would it go into a video or?
I'm sure. I'm sure at some point they, you know, it'll probably be distributed through Sony distribution or Hallmark, you know, distribution at that point.
And then do you get the foreign rights to it or?
Yes, the foreign rights, I believe they're owned by SP Entertainment and Hallmark and,
And they dub in the different languages depending on where it goes?
I hope so.
Okay, I remember first time in Puerto Rico. This is many years ago. I'm watching this program. It's an American program. And they're talking in Spanish. It's all dubbed in. And that was my first experience. Wow.
You didn't know they could speak Spanish.
I didn't know they could do that. And so I guess you've been to Japan and all over. So I guess if it goes to Japan, they'll dub it in Japanese?
Absolutely.
Except so many people now speak English. It's
it's becoming more Western in Tokyo, as it is in a lot of places.
No, have you been to Tokyo?
I have been to Tokyo. I lived there for 6 years. Yeah.
I had a friend that used to go to Tokyo a lot, and she had blonde hair. And she said the girls, little girls and boys, were fascinated by her hair. Being blonde, and they wanted to touch it all the time.
It is true. Well, I'm not blonde at roots, but it is true.
You're blonde
enough. I think when you live in a culture that everyone has the same pigmentation, whether it's dark hair,
like in Japan,
when you do see somebody who's got a different color, it's shocking. You know, so you do kind of you're a little bit in awe, and you know, Japan, one of the safest countries in the world. Really, you know.
Yeah, but you also said in different words that their race has not been mongrelized.
Well, I think there's a lot of, you know, Western men who are starting to do that, right?
Well, there's a
lot of Asian women with Western men now.
I spoke to an Asian woman a few months ago, and they said a lot of Western men have, they call it yellow fever.
Yeah, there you go.
With Asian women.
In 100,000 years, if we haven't blown ourselves up or get hit by that comet that somewhere has our name on it, probably everyone will, be kind of like mixed, look kind of like the same or whatever. And with genetic engineering only on the horizon.
Well, that's frightening.
That's it's a strong possibility.
My wife is a Salvadorian.
Oh, interesting.
And I'm Jewish. Well, it's not a race, but so I call my kids Jutinos.
What do they call you?
I don't know. They speak in Spanish, and I don't know them. I don't know what they're talking about.
They can call you. You don't know what they're saying about you.
It's how they say it. It's their tone. But when I met my wife with a small agency, the two owners of the agency, one was Mexican-American, born in Mexico. One was Irish-American, first generation here.
Oh, wow.
One of the salespeople was from Ethiopia. The sales secretary was Filipina. The operator was from Vietnam.
Well, I hope they're not voting for Trump.
And I'm second generation. I'm second generation Russian. Speaking about Trump, you had mentioned that you're doing something with Hillary in the California.
Well,
tell us
you know
about
what?
It.
I'm a big supporter of Hillary. I really base myself as a Republican because the majority of the people that are around me are Republicans.
They are.
And John Voight's a strong Republican.
In your business are mostly Democrats.
Well, I think the younger generation, a lot of them are Democrats. But as you get
John
older
Voight
and you start
is
to
not younger.
Learn a little bit, yes, but as you
and,
learn...
And you're not older, you're younger.
Well, thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
How often do you see him?
Who?
John Voight.
I see him quite regularly. I'd say he's a big part of the family
when
and
you
really
see him
knowledgeable.
Next, you tell him you met somebody who remembers him as Joe Buck.
Joe Buck. Okay, right. I
Joe Buck was...
Midnight Cowboy.
Midnight Cowboy. That was a big breakout role.
Yep.
I mean, my favorite thing is when Dustin Hoffman crosses the street and the cab cuts him off. Hey, I'm a pedestrian.
Ratso Rizzo.
Ratso Rizzo. Right. But anyway, getting back to Hillary, what are you doing with the campaign?
Well, I'm just a supporter. You know, sometimes it can be,
telephone
you know,
calls.
Helping, you know, phone calls. Sometimes it could be helping at rallies. Really just kind of educating people on sort of, you know, the things that she's for and how it could change if she gets a presidency.
How do you handle it if somebody questions you about her dealings with the Clinton Foundation?
Well, look, I'm a big supporter of the Clinton Foundation. I've done a lot of work for them as an ambassador. I really, truly endorse it. And, you know, any kind of foundation, especially when you're running for presidency, there's going to be people who are criticizing what
of
they
course,
do.
It's always.
But, you know, they really do some fantastic things to helping people around the world and educating not only just Americans, but people who are in need of help. You
yeah,
know,
well, it's more than yeah, more than America. It's around the country in Africa and all the whatever. I think it was the HIV. They
yes.
provide food for the poor. It's
third world.
Amazing, yeah.
And they're very they're really firm believers in women and human rights. They're supportive of you know these tribes that are in you know places and bringing you know clean drinking water and helping educate people who don't have internet access. And,
yeah.
And,
okay.
And also building jobs for people in those cultures that so they can earn income for themselves to help support their family.
Well, how does your husband take this? Because it's
very interesting politics you know conversation. We actually had dinner. Over at the house on Friday, my family came in from Chicago, and we all had a dinner. And it's interesting when you have different viewpoints. If you can maturely talk about it
without throwing pots,
without throwing
other.
Pots, you okay. do actually learn a lot about what Republicans and Democrats are thinking. And sometimes when they're on the same sort of alignment, you know, and when they're not. So I've learned a lot about health. And about relations with other countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the key you is know, to have an open mind and listen to the other person, even if you think they're full of it. Like we have a friend that we know, he doesn't want to hear anything about the other side. His way, it's his way or the highway. You have to be able to listen. Now, I've known communists from way, way, way back. Hard, die-hard communists, but they would listen to you.
Have you ever been to a meeting?
I was never to a meeting, no, but just in conversations with them.
Okay, we can produce his movie.
Well, no, I've actually been to a Friend of Aid meeting. You know, and I really listened and took to heart. You know, it's politics is a very funny thing because I didn't really know a lot about politics. You hear people talk about different issues and you hear what's going on the radio. If I turn on Fox, they're all Republicans. If I turn on, and, you know, so it's very one-sided. But if you, I think John in particular and, you know, Stephen and my mother-in-law and father-in-law, they've really helped me understand a lot about some of the issues with healthcare and, you know, finance and sort of wars that have gone on and sort of the history and sort of where it is to lead us. But I do want to say I'm a big Margaret Thatcher fan, but I am also, I really truly believe it's you can always tell a lot about a country about who they choose to celebrate as their leader. And there's something about Trump that I'm not quite sure I always believe him. And I think it's the way that he communicates and he's very flippant. And it could be that he doesn't have a lot of patience or the way he articulates. But sometimes I really have to go, I'm not sure that's true. I'm not sure if that's
Well, the thing with him, he's full of the, where it would be hyperbole. It's sort of like, we're going to fix this. We're going to law and order. We're going to make, the African American more affluent. 95% of the African Americans are going to vote for me at the end of 4 years. We're going to give them jobs. We're going to do this. I mean, if he could do one-tenth of what he promises, I'd vote for him. But I don't believe him.
Well, what's very funny is if we looked at a lot of his real estate and some of the businesses he built, I'd like to see how many are Americans. Because we as Americans, we are full of pride and what we do for a living. And there's not so many people that, for example, are going to stand on the street and kind of give direction and say, stop and go. Those people you see in
True.
Japan,
yeah.
you know, a lot of them are elderly or people who don't have a lot of money, but they don't really care. They're willing to take that and point direction.
Well, that's what
us as Americans, we don't really have that. We have a big sense of, you know, accomplishment. And I'm not going to say it's ego, but we really, you know, we think high. It's America.
What it is. It is ego.
No. What they say is, you know, they say, oh, they're illegal, basically speaking about Latinos, take a lot of jobs from the African-Americans.
It's I don't think so.
The Latinos' jobs that they take,
no one
the
here
African-American
wants them.
Don't want them. They get, again, rightly or wrongly, they get more money, you know, from government
exactly.
than if they took a job.
The jobs that they fill, the average American wouldn't touch. They don't. Oh, we don't. I don't do that. I don't pick lettuce. Are you crazy?
That's horrible.
I think yeah. Also, you know, in this day and age, here's a woman. Hillary Clinton has served many responsibilities in the last 15 years. She's probably the most qualified in the fact that she has good relations with other countries and their leaders.
Yes.
She's been there and seen not only through her husband's leadership, but also, you know, she's actually been in a state where she's actually had access to, you know, governing.
You're correct. You're correct. She is better qualified than anybody who would want to run, who tried to run, who got up there and lost in the debates. No question about it. She is the best qualified. But I personally, I wouldn't feel comfortable. But then, we don't want to get too much in politics. Ooh. We have to stick with
this. Is a to-be-continued conversation, because
right.
I'd love to hear why you'd feel more comfortable with Donald Trump.
Oh, well,
because I'll tell you why.
Tell
because
me why.
He's not a professional politician.
So I'm not a
He's not part of the Washington Beltway crowd.
I'm not a
you
professional
can't
politician.
Buy him.
I'm not a who said.
That's true. But what are you going to do? Wipe out the rest of Washington?
No.
You need people like that who actually have education.
Can't wipe them out.
Who said you can't buy him? The Chinese. He owes Chinese money. He owes like $300 million
to China. They're buying him. He'll owe them till kingdom come.
No, but he doesn't care.
Bankruptcy again.
Yeah, right.
But they pay rent in his buildings. They'll just pull out.
So
he'll be broke.
So he'll join with us. He'll come down to our level.
He has Russian investors. He does not disclose his finances because I think his finances is convoluted with foreign money.
But either does the Clinton Foundation disclose their finances.
It's open. That's an open book.
Since when?
It's always been.
According to the Internet, as of yesterday, it wasn't.
You believe the Internet?
Sooner than I believe you.
You believe the Internet more than you believe me. That's it. That's the show. Okay, Greg, we got to cut this off. He doesn't believe me. We're talking
about.
Listen, everybody out there, whether you're listening or looking or whatever, Malcolm and I disagree on a lot of things. But one thing we do agree on
is
stories have to be told, whether they're out there in politics or with very interesting guests like Jamie right here. And
okay, Jamie, what's your next project?
So my next project right now is probably we're in talks about a couple projects. I'm right now finishing up a children's book series, which is very dear to me. It's called I Am Sam. And it's actually based off of my son, Sam.
Your son, Sam?
Yes.
No,
my
son, I have an
8-year-old little boy named Sam. And as you know, I own a production company called Blue Eyed Pictures.
Yes.
And we founded it 23 years ago in Tokyo, and then went to London, and then went to Los Angeles. And through my travels of going to my offices, my son would accompany me. Mm-hmm. And he would always ask very curious questions, you know, like, you know, why do they have a king and queen instead of a president? Or why are they eating with chopsticks instead of forks?
It's tradition.
And yes, but when you have to explain that to somebody who is, well, now he's 8, but at the time he was 6, I was Googling everything, trying to, you know, simplify it into a couple sentences that gave, you know, an explanation that was, you know,
there's
a good page.
There's an easy explanation. They could ask the same questions about you. Why do you use a knife and fork and spoon? That's our custom. That's how we learned. They learned with chopsticks.
Right, there's a history.
Right, but there's a history. But the problem is when you go into a bookstore and a child is curious about the culture and why things are the way they are, there are no books like that for their age. They're travel books. Now, a child at that age doesn't really care about geography. They want to know why they are different than they are, why they're being raised different.
Can I tell you what my parents would say to me if I asked such a question when I was a kid?
What would they say?
Because.
Because.
How old is your son?
I would go get the encyclopedia book. Now we're lucky enough to have Google.
How old is your son?
He's 8.
Does he read or does he Google a lot?
You know, he reads a lot. He's required to read 20 minutes every night.
By you or the school?
By the school, but he is very into reading about people. He's into biographies, you know, about Martin Luther King and Amelia Earhart, and he's really into sports players right now. He has a love of soccer, massive love of soccer. So anything that has to do with, You know, in Europe, they call it football, here soccer.
Football.
Yes, he's a very big Messi and Ronaldo fan, huge Ronaldo fan. So, you know, learning those type of things, you always, I always tell him, you can always watch TV, you can always watch your iPad. But the truth is, when you read books, you get a different viewpoint because you're imagining it.
You're imagining
it. I'll give you an example. Harry Potter, right?
Yeah.
He watched all the Harry Potter movies. He grew up with Harry Potter. We just saw in London the new Harry Potter play, which was fantastic. It's, you know, based off of a new story, off of the last book, 19 years later, and Harry Potter's a father. And it's it's a whole new story. And when you go see it for the first time without reading the book, you have an impression because you've seen it just like it's a movie. But when you read the book, you get little details and your mind starts exploring. And at that age, it's so important to be able to have that freedom.
What, Malcolm?
No, no. But my son just said I was a big Game of Thrones. I've been watching that.
Oh, my God.
But I started reading the book.
You're kidding. That's like
that is so confusing once I'm reading the book.
It's a monster of an epic.
Because I don't, you know, I hear the names, but I don't recognize the faces, at least on TV. When I see the show, I recognize the faces. Oh, that's so-and-so.
Well, was the TV compacted, or did they combine some of the characters?
No.
No?
TV? No.
They
no.
use all of them?
What's okay. clever what they do, though, is that if you can't get it on TV, you just go to HBO Now and just download it. It's on your iPad.
Well, actually, you know? what I did is I binge-watched it. I didn't watch it from day one. I did about 4 years and 2 months. I like binge-watching, by the way. That's my new favorite because I don't have to wait till the next week. You know, I can do it if I like, if I love
binge,
the show.
I binge, but I do it on planes.
That's what I did. In fact, I did that with House of Cards on the airplane, okay?
You're naming my two favorite shows
I'd watch maybe 4 episodes in one trip, and wow, what a program. The acting, incredible. The writing, incredible. And people would say to me, you never watched House of Cards? No, I don't have enough time. I can't watch everything. There's too much out there.
I love
on a plane,
But somehow when I watch House of Cards, especially when I'm seeing the coming season, I think too much of Hillary.
Oh, come on. There's no comparison.
You know what? I'm going to end with this. I remember when he got nominated, you know, for an Emmy.
Yeah.
You know, and on the cover of Hollywood Reporter, he had his college ring, you know, his... Yeah. You know how he does that, and it said "F you." Thank you for the nomination, and it was funny because he was really saying "fuck you," but it was kind of the Frank Underwood.
you said a bad word.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. On this program,
you say whatever you like.
No, Greg is laughing. He knows that he could push it through.
Yeah, I'm starting to tell you before the other station that we were with. Well, I'm not going to mention any names because you never know. You can't burn all your bridges, and they might get
this is a beautiful studio. This is fantastic.
You should see the other
room. Over there, you couldn't say anything. So every once in a while, I would say, Malcolm, you know, I'm going to drop an F-bomb to see if the engineer is asleep. And one time he was asleep, and it got out. And they didn't complain to me. They complained to Malcolm, who told me, keep your mouth shut.
At that time, we were on some terrestrial radio stations. Oh. Now we're not. Now we're strictly on the Internet.
Okay.
So the Internet, there is no regulations. That's why I want to do a lot of... The movies that we were talking about, I want to do on the on a cable, because cable you can get away with a lot that you can't get away with on terrestrial TV.
Yeah, in fact,
TV,
we were going to ask you to come topless because we could do it on this program.
No, it would be.
I'm sure I would definitely go down as the family producer on that one. That would be the end of my career.
But we'd all go topless. We're equal opportunity. In fact, last week in Venice, did you read that?
No,
Venice Beach over here. On Sunday, they had a group of women who thought it was unfair that men could go topless and women can't, and they had a topless parade.
Were they from Europe?
And I didn't go. No, they were from here.
And so they showed this on TV, Channel 7.
Yeah, but they blotted it out. Getting back to that, during in the mid-70s, you weren't around, you were too young, but topless bathing was very much in vogue in New York, even though it was illegal. I had shared a house out.
It depends where you went.
I had a house out in Fire Island.
Oh, how beautiful.
And like on Friday night, we would come and there would be a party. And let's say I would meet you or another young lady that I didn't know.
Yeah, we did meet you there.
Yeah. Now, and I was talking to her.
That was my mother. Yeah. No, I'm joking.
Probably. And we make friends. And the next day, I see them on the beach, and they were topless.
Ah.
And the hardest thing to do was to keep eye contact. Hi, Jamie.
Well, funny you should say that. For the summer, we were fortunate enough to be in Europe, and we decided to go visit some friends in a little island off of Ibiza in Spain called Formentera. And, you know, the Europeans, they're very open, and men are walking naked, and women, you know, and my 8-year-old comes over, and she goes, "Mommy, boobies." And I said, "Yes." I said, "Just don't stare. It's disrespectful." Right. And he was just like in awe with mouth open. There was no getting past it.
No touching.
But again, a clash of culture.
Class of culture, which I like, which is why I did these books.
Japan, I never saw it. I was never there, but I remember reading about it many, many years ago in a public bathhouse. All of us would go in there naked to whatever.
Every prefecture has their own
bathhouse. Because you didn't dare do that outside the bathhouse.
It had nothing to do, but nudity had nothing to do with sexuality.
Well, the idea about all this is about culture. So the books are based on culture, and hopefully we're going to make it into a TV travel show.
Oh, that'd be great.
So that we can travel and really give the kids that one-on-one experience of seeing it firsthand. But I really want to – there's a big educational tool, you know, attached to it, which is teaching them education, and I put an eco-friendly – you know, part of that in there to help them understand, you know, what we do in different cultures as far as recycling or drinking water or tap versus bottle or, you know, how they do things in different cultures. So I'm excited about that project.
Yeah, and I think it's very, by the way, I think it's very timely because it's an international world right now.
It is.
I mean, with people coming over, with us going there, with seeing TV, anything that happens any part of the world, we're there in 2 seconds.
That's very true. I mean, look at the typical business person right now. We don't even, you know, we hop on planes to go do meetings.
Well, look at a war, for instance. World War II, I remember. You found out about what happened days later, okay, after they would edit it and clean it up or whatever. Now you get it live while it's happening on CNN.
It's true. Well, that's the problem with our the younger generation. I feel like they're going to grow up with a lot of anxiety because they're seeing so much. They have access to so much information, whereas before we had to search for it.
Yeah, but
it's like in their face.
I grew up where they'd have these fire drills, take shelter drills at the public school, where there's an atomic bomb is going to be dropped, so we hid under the desk. What good would that do?
Nothing.
To hide under the desk if a bomb
would be fried either way.
It was actually to keep you calm, remain calm.
Remain calm.
Some sort of structure to be safe.
I thought that was alcohol did that.
Yeah.
At that age,
you can't.
Or a little pot, you know.
Yeah.
Do kids that age drink? People, you would ask me, did you ever smoke? I says, yeah. Did you quit? Yeah, I quit a long time ago. How old were you when you quit? I was 9 years old when I quit. What are you talking about? I tried it once when I was 9. I said, blah, and I quit right then and there.
Well, I tried it once when I was 16, and 12 years later I quit. Did you ever smoke?
I did for a little bit, but it was more like one of those kind of smoking where I kind of lost it, you know, like on set and just needed like a breather.
Oh, to take a deep breath.
But, you know, I'm a big health freak. I believe in, you know, there's people who I've grown up with and we all age differently. And it's just interesting because you might not see the immediate effects, but long term, when you start getting older, you really do. I'm a big eat right, workout. There's just, it's a simple structure and routine that you got to follow, but it's just a matter of we follow it.
I want to go to the basement of your house and see your portrait.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
You ever see a portrait of Dorian Gray?
No, it's in the attic, not in the basement.
You don't age.
I don't age?
No, you could be a teenager.
Aw, thank you.
You look exactly like you did a year and a half ago.
It's all those chia seeds and kale and all the fruits, everything that I'm eating.
Yeah, you could pass for a teenager. Yeah, you could.
Thank you. I got to tell you a story. I was so excited to work out a couple weeks ago, and I was like, you know, I'm going to get up and go to Barry's Boot Camp, and I'm going to go to Burn 60, and I'm going to get it together. So I decided that there was a 5 a.m. class at Barry's Boot Camp. So I was like, okay, I'm going to try this.
I don't turn
so
over.
So I got up. I got up at 4:30, and I was completely out of it. Driving, I get up there. You know, it's in Sherman Oaks. I get up there thinking no one is going to be in this class.
You're full.
I couldn't even get on a treadmill. I couldn't even get on a floor mat.
Well, the next time you want, I live in Sherman Oaks. You're welcome. My kids are in school now. I have 2 extra bedrooms. You and the husband could come and stay overnight.
Come without him, whatever. But, you know, you talk about getting up. When I was in the Sheriff's Academy that's my coffee. We had to be there at 6:30 in the morning on a Sunday. 6:30 in the morning. Get ready. We had our inspection at 7 a.m. And that wasn't easy. But, you know, I was so damn determined. I said, I'm going to do it. I don't care what. I will do it.
Well, also, school starts early.
Yeah, well, when I did the L.A. Marathon, and I was...
You did the L.A. Marathon?
I did two of them in one New York. And on Saturday morning, when we did the long runs... Yeah, I had to be in from Sherman Oaks. I had to be in Santa Monica at 5 o'clock in the morning to do the run.
Wow!
And then when
what
I was
what was that experience like?
Oh, I loved it. I'll tell you about that one day. Okay. If you're interested, I think everybody should do a marathon.
I did the Malibu Triathlon.
Oh, I haven't done that.
And that was a lot of work. But you know what?
I'd probably drown swimming.
I started to sign up for that so many times. Something would get in the way where I couldn't do it.
The bike
you know
I could
what
do.
I love?
Triathlon, not the marathon. That's a little too long.
I'm going to tell you what I like is that my son got inspired from watching me do the Malibu Triathlon, and they started a tot trot for kids his age. So the next year, he said, I want to do the marathon. So they did this run for their age along the beach, and they all got little medals, and it really inspired him.
You should try this. A fun run, a mud run. Have you heard of that?
A mud run? Now we're talking.
It's in the mud, and you slide in the mud.
Is that like mud wrestling?
No, it is, except it's like that you enjoy that your son would.
Where did they have that?
Las Virgenes around Calabasas.
Las Virgenes. Isn't Calabasas? That appropriate?
Yeah. Around Calabasas, Malibu.
I never heard of it.
It's
in
a
Calabasas.
Mud run, yeah. Well, you haven't heard of a lot of things in Calabasas.
I'd never heard of a lot of things all over. That's okay. Now, on the triathlon, what are the lengths of the different – well, you do three things. You do a swim, bike ride, and a run, right?
That's correct.
How long are they?
You know, I forgot the distance, to be honest, because it was a couple years ago. But I believe it was either 12 or 14 miles on the bike.
12 miles, I think.
Okay. It was at 12. Yeah, and it was right along PCH. And let me tell you, I trained hard. I actually hired somebody who – before I even – started training, I hadn't been on a cycle like that in a while where your feet go in and you
Is it level ground?
It is level ground. We trained along PCH. There was a route that they had all the way past near Zuma Beach.
Yeah.
And they circled back around. We passed Leo Creo
What about the run?
And the run was the same thing.
The run is 10K.
It was a 10K.
Yeah, 6.2 miles.
I was going to say about 7 miles.
No, 6.2.
So it's less than 7 miles.
And then it's a quarter mile swim, I think.
Quarter mile swim?
Yeah. Yes. Well, I have a confession. I only did the biking part. We each tagged teams. I didn't do the whole thing.
You mean split with other people?
Yes.
Like a tag team?
Yes, because...
That's cheating.
Okay, speaking about a tag team, your tag team has arrived. Greg, send her in. Rachel has come. Greg, bring her in.
So come on in, pretty lady.
Did you win? Or did your team win?
I did, but I'm going to tell you a very funny story. So, you know, they have these apps that they put all the results from the triathlon on, right? So I finished the triathlon, and someone on, who was watching and part of our team said, so crazy, we're listed as number one on the app. And I said, that is impossible. There is no way, because there were people passing me while I was biking. And I know it was so scorching hot. I said, that's impossible. And then all of a sudden I got a memo saying that, from the app, like one of those pushes that said we were number one. And I said, how is that possible?
Your team, maybe.
Well, the person who entered the information for us
cheated.
Put me as a
paraplegic.
So I was in the special needs section. Oh, my God. And nobody entered for the special needs section for bicycling. So, of course, I won. Oh, I was number one.
But
we laughed. We laughed. Yeah.
Maybe we could do that, Malcolm. Yeah. Tell them we're paraplegics.
No, I'm waiting. That was it. I'm waiting until I get to 80 so I can get to the other division.
What is it called? Paraathlete. It's a paraathlete. Yeah. That's what it's called. Not paraplegic. God forbid. That's terrible.
Well, one day what I want to do is the Ironman. The Ironman
triathlon.
You're kidding me. The Ironman triathlon is...
It's like a 100-mile bike ride.
No, 2.4 miles swimming. I think it's 112 miles, 114 miles bike riding, and then a full marathon.
And it's hard. I have a girlfriend of mine. God bless you, Shannon Factor.
In your dreams.
You did fantastic. She just did it. She didn't accomplish it the first time and then went back for the second. I see it all over her.
And the win is like, does it in like 8.5 hours.
That's brutal. Oh, that's
anyway,
harsh.
You're here.
So, Rachel, I'm exciting.
Who's this girl who walked in?
Rachel.
We don't know her.
I just gave
Who is she? Did you just come out off the street?
I
we don't let people in just like that.
I just walk around the street sometimes to see what will happen to me.
Malcolm, did you check her passport?
I detect an accent.
I patted myself down.
Well, you patted yourself?
Yeah, just to make sure I got nothing on
you,
me.
You patted yourself down.
I do,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, where are you from?
I'm clean. I'm good.
Where are you from?
I'm New Zealand.
New Zealand.
Oh, what voice is crazy? Accent.
That is, I know it's a silly accent, isn't it?
Yeah, well,
I'm
can
on it. I'm trying to get
I know
rid of
we
it.
Speak the same language.
Us Americans are suckers for accents. Don't get rid
we
of it.
We speak the same language, but when I hear somebody from New Zealand with their accent, I don't know what the hell they're talking about.
This is the problem. That's why. People just nod and smile.
Well they nod and smile at me. They say, oh, you're from New York. And they don't understand what they're
talking
about.
All right, let's start with names.
Introduce her.
Yeah, go ahead.
So Rachel and I have been friends for a long time.
How long?
God, yes.
Good. Okay,
It's been a while now.
We're only 22, so
there you go.
Since we met, like when we were 10.
And you know each other 12 years, a lifetime.
And
okay.
Rachel, I started as a commercial producer and then kind of worked my way into, well, actually I was a feature producer, then worked into commercials, then went back to features. You know, Rachel is a commercial producer as well, and we had a fortunate experience where we were introduced by somebody, and we got to work together, and we reconnected at Cannes Lion this year, which is the advertising, you know,
festival
in the south of France, which is pretty swanky in itself.
That's cool.
And we were partners in crime. She was fantastic and took
partners
me under her wing.
Partners in crime, I like that.
Yeah, we're working very hard, but working hard at the Lions involves
there
drinking.
Comes the accent.
It's very hot.
That's not a New Zealand.
That's a New England accent. Very hard.
Hot.
Very hard.
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 Hard. I'm working on this. I told you. I'm just learning this English thing.
This guy on your left, his name is Malcolm. But you can call him whatever you
actually,
like.
Can I call you Mal?
You can call him Mal.
Call him anything.
Actually, in the 70s, I used to produce TV commercials for an ad agency.
Yes. Oh, which one?
Daniel and Charles.
Don't know them.
No, I don't think they're in business anymore.
Nope, I don't think so.
After you left, they went out of business.
Of course.
It should have been Daniel, Charles, and Malcolm. You should have got that name.
It should have
Otherwise, they would still exist.
But I remember in those days, we had a creative director creative director, I think it's Jeff Metzner, who used to do what called a Jufro.
A Jufro.
Here when you come in big.
My brother had one of those.
And big alligator. And big, these wide suspenders.
Oh, yeah.
With the bell bottoms and a t-shirt. Guy was good for $300,000 a year.
And this is in the 70s. Were they red? Malcolm, were these suspenders red?
I don't remember.
It's pretty much the outfit Jamie was wearing when I met her.
Red suspenders?
Yeah, just the
red
suspenders.
Suspenders.
No, just suspenders.
Nothing else, just the suspenders.
Well, that could be sexy, the suspenders, no top.
And nothing else, she said.
Actually, a very big mentor to me, Andrew Robertson, chairman of BBDO Worldwide, wears suspenders all the time.
It's a good look.
He's a good look, you know, and I believe he's from South Africa.
South Africa.
He's South African, I think. I hope so.
My new insurance agent is from South Africa. Oh. So I'm hearing all sorts of accents, and your accent also from South Brooklyn.
I tried to lose it. Oh, you know, I worked so hard on losing it. When you go to college, at least when I did, as part of the English curriculum, one of the courses had to be on speech. And I remember we go in there, the instructor or professor, whatever the hell he was, you'd speak into the mic and then they play back. and you hear yourself for the first time. And my first thought was, holy shit, do I sound like that? And obviously, I was with a Brooklyn accent that you could cut with a knife.
And even worse today.
Yes. So I tried to work on it.
And we're friends.
And I thought I was doing good. And one time I'm making a trip. I was going back and forth from East Coast to West Coast. I'm out on the West Coast. I go to a car rental agency. And the young lady there says to me after we do the transaction, she says, you're from New York, aren't you? I said, wow, does my accent give me away? She said, no, it's your attitude. True story. Okay. So for whatever it's worth.
Well, but it's like that in any culture. That's how I tell the difference between Chinese and Japanese. I love when someone goes, go on, speak Japanese to them. And we're in a Japanese restaurant. I'm like, no, that's all right. They're like, no, no, go ahead. I'm like, they're not Japanese. I'm like, you can tell right away by the mannerisms.
And you speak to, well, you said you live in Japan. Are you fluent in Japanese? Or?
I speak really well, yeah.
So I can,
I'm always nervous to say I speak fluent, but yes, I speak really well.
So next time I can, me and my wife can invite you and your husband out for a Japanese food and you can order it.
Absolutely.
Wow.
It depends if they're Cantonese or Korean. I might not be able to say,
the guys that work in those so-called Japanese restaurants.
They're Latinos.
Yeah. Always. So.
Well, that's okay. My wife is Latina, so she can talk to either you can talk to them or my wife can. Or you could speak New Zealand to them.
That's right. You know.
Do they have a language?
Aside from English? Do actually. We have Maori.
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 Oh.
Yeah.
It's not Maori.
Language.
What did I think it was Maori?
No, it is Maori. But the Maoris pronounce it Maori.
Okay.
But we call it Maoris. Are
they the ones that do the weird dancing? That's the Samoans.
That's us. That's the Haka.
No, the ones that do the.
and they
stick their tongues out.
Yes, they're called.
Rachel's actually doing the dance. I love
that. You know all that stuff.
Of course.
Can you dance?
Yeah, of course.
Greg, the next time we're
on the table.
The next time we're going to take the table out, and she's gonna dance.
Yeah,
and
by the way, Rachel and I reconnected in Cannes because she is very involved in the VR world. And we're trying to work on a lot of virtual reality projects together.
I hate virtual reality.
And so maybe we could put your little dancing and we could put a little selfie in the VR.
Jamie, you know, we just realized
we're
speak Japanese.
Oh, there you go.
Do you know all of the...
But
curse words in Japanese?
It's the future.
It is.
I know some, because I don't frequently use those in everyday...
You can get all your translations in there.
Malcolm Digital Radio.
Google Translate.
Forever.
You could go viral in New
I was surprised. I found it by accident because the story that we just finished, I needed some Spanish whatever... I got it right here. I put it in English, and it came out right as I'm typing in English. It comes back to me in Spanish.
I love it. Well, here's even a better one. We were in Italy recently, Rachel and I, and you just speak it in, and it says it.
Yeah.
But it is kind of funny the way it communicates. Sometimes it's
a little off.
especially on the street.
Well, they have the new telephones. They have a chip in the telephone where I could speak English, and if you speak Spanish... It will come out translate Spanish.
And
how far is it from you have a chip that's placed in your ear, and I'll speak to you directly, and it'll be translated in whatever language you speak.
As it goes,
It's not too far away.
Not too far away. Did you see the one today about the sign language gloves?
No.
So these guys have developed gloves that translate from sign language to spoken word.
Now that's clever.
Yeah.
That's
I saw
fantastic.
That 30 years ago on Star Trek.
Star Trek.
Yeah. That documentary Star Trek. I love that documentary.
Actually, Star Trek did a lot of very avant-garde things.
Yeah.
There was one they had with Frank Ocean. I don't know if you remember that one.
I remember that one.
Where there were two people that were at war with each other on the planet.
He was two-tone.
And it was two-tone. And one of them was black-faced on the right and white-faced on the left. And the other one they were having feuds with was just the opposite.
There's a moral to that story, obviously.
But obvious, you know what it is. But they always did that little slice that they could get away with because they were talking about another society. But they could comment about what we were doing.
Yeah,
that's true. You know what's crazy is Leonard Nimoy's son, when I was 17, cast me as an actress in a movie he was doing, and we filmed at his dad's house, and I walked in, and that's all I could think about. I was in shock, you know. I wasn't a big Star Trek fan. I was more Star Wars, but I was sitting there, and my older brothers were very into Star Trek.
My neighbor was Bruce Berman. I'm Malcolm Berman. I used to get his mail all the time. But I never got
anything good?
I never got residual checks.
So. If you did, you wouldn't be here plugging all this stuff.
I'd be in New Zealand. Do they have extradition rights?
Leonard didn't.
I don't think so.
Malcolm,
you'd be fine.
Leonard Nimoy, did you know that he was Jewish?
I knew he was dead. Yes, I know.
No, because I saw one time on TV and I was surprised. He did a whole thing on Jewish people.
Well, he spoke Yiddish.
Yeah, in Yiddish, right.
He grew up, his parents spoke Yiddish, and he was fluent in Yiddish. In fact, that symbol he has, I think he got it from his rabbi or something. It was
really?
Some sort of Jewish symbol, yeah.
So it's not like a secret society or anything like that. Okay.
It was a Maoris from New Zealand.
Maoris?
They came up with
it.
Maoris.
They stuck out their tongues.
Was it Maoris?
Maoris.
I love the dances when they have, I think it's the rugby team, and they do it. Well, we had, where I live, Harside Estates, they had a luau.
Oh, yeah.
And they had the dances there.
Yeah, it's that sort of whole region, South Pacific.
So how did you learn that? I mean, I thought only guys did that dance, or at least that's what I saw going to Hawaii.
It is a war dance.
Yeah, right.
Are you trying to tell us you're transgender?
I am a little bit warlike. Oh, no, I was transgender. I'm trying to give that up. No, I'm a little, you know, we all know the dance. Actually, some women do the dance.
Oh, you're a warrior.
It's just because it's before rugby.
Oh, you could be a warrior.
I could be a warrior.
That's
interesting. They play before rugby.
Yes, they do the dance before rugby, but the reason everyone thinks it's just male.
I knew that because RGA did that campaign for Beats. With the athlete
they do it, and the other people, and of course a lot of the rugby players about 6'2",
yeah,
6 foot, that's wide.
Tongan and Samoan.
Yeah, and they're huge, and you see them stick out their tongue and bang, and it's a forget about it game called.
I'm going
off. Why are these Samoan guys so big and fat? The ladies aren't.
No, the ladies are big.
But the guys are humongous.
The ladies are big also, because that was the difference. Beauty in the Samoan culture was people that were heavy, because I think the king and queen, that's what you could teach in the culture.
That's interesting. Yeah. I'm going to have to do a book about I Am Sam in New Zealand now.
Right, New Zealand, because they were big, and they respected people who were fat.
Same with Tonga.
Yeah,
Tonga and Vanuatu,
Samoans,
the king and queen of Tonga were very big, and everyone was wanting to be big.
Right.
They eat a lot of taro and root vegetables.
Right, it was likewise Barcelona. Wow. You know why it's Barcelona?
Barcelona, yeah, had a speech impediment.
Right, the king had a speech impediment.
Yeah, that's a story. Was that true or was it made up?
I remember, because he couldn't speak on TV.
You remember that far back? Very good.
It's the story about the Catalan language, which is only spoken in Spain.
And most people don't know that there's a war in Spain.
A war?
Yeah, with the Catalans and the
Now?
Yeah.
Now, right now?
There's a group that wants separation.
It's not all-out war. But
not all-out war.
Somebody always wants separation.
It's like in Canada.
Usually the wife.
Don't you remember when Brooklyn wanted to separate from the Union?
No, actually, Brooklyn and Manhattan and New York were separate cities. You know, Brooklyn was its own city before
they
united.
Prior to they combined five boroughs. Oh. Into one city. There was Brooklyn, Queens, Bronx, Manhattan, and Staten Island. Separate.
Yes.
And then, bingo, I don't know, 1880 or whatever the hell it was.
I forget. I was a young boy then.
You were still in elementary school then.
Okay, for non-New York people, if you live in Brooklyn or Queens, or any of the boroughs, and you went to the city, you went to Manhattan.
Manhattan, right.
And
we still go to Manhattan.
Right. But if you were out, if you were not from the city to New York City, if you would go to Manhattan, you went to town.
Oh.
So when I was working in TV, I was working in WNEW TV, most of the executives and producers were from non-New Yorkers. They were from Chicago, from other states.
Connecticut.
And they used to say town. And I would get there. Oh, yeah, I was in town. Yeah, I live in town.
You know what's going to be even cooler? The next time Rachel and I are on your show, we're actually going to be able to VR ourselves.
Into the show.
Really?
Into Brooklyn or Manhattan and be able to feel what it is to be there
them.
Well, we definitely want you guys together on the show. Not that we don't love you individually. Don't get me wrong. But I think together there's a certain synergy.
Yeah. You see what happened? She was going to come have a drink with me afterwards, and I was like, yeah, come over here.
This
fuck with me.
Better than a drink. Here, here's a drink.
No, I got that.
If you want something stronger, we have it downstairs.
Well, Jamie just bought us some Chardonnay.
I did.
We should have had it up here.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Jamie,
Malcolm, you want to...
Well, I don't know what I'm allowed to do and what I'm not allowed to do here.
We are an internet. We could get totally nude here and have... Invite dancing girls here.
We're dancing boys.
Such a
piece,
filthy mind.
I'm getting nervous about like
you're trying to not
what I'm allowed to do.
If
when
you
I'm
listen to
do.
Him, Hallmark will fire you.
That's right. True. You never know. Do you want to hear a crazy story?
Yes.
My older brother comes out here from Chicago, and he's begging me to go meet his kindergarten, you know, friend that he went to grammar school with. You know.
Okay.
So I said, no, it's okay, you go. He's like, come on. I said, no, I gotta work. You know, I gotta be on set. I just booked a job. I gotta, like, get my head around everything. So they call me up together, and it ends up that this woman did all the PR for JL Family Ranch. And she's the PR company that works with Hallmark. She knew exactly who I was. And what's scary is she said, I've known you since you were in diapers. That's a small world.
How the hell did that happen?
You know, so I said, it's a good thing you didn't take me to that breakfast because I might have ruined the entire impression.
Anyway, guys, I got to tell you.
You got another story? Is this a good one or a boring one?
No, it's a simple story.
Stan likes
simple.
The teeth okay.
Our time is up. You're listening
Holy
to Malcolm
shit,
Digital Radio.
It is
.com.
Over.
Oh, wow.
No, you're listening to The View from Over Here.
On Malcolm Digital Radio.
On Malcom Digital Radio.
And these guys,
are
going to come back. And quick, do you have anything to promote?
I Am Sam coming out at the end of the year, hopefully. And JL Family Ranch 2.
We'll have you on before that.
When is the number 2 of JL Ranch?
We're working on the development of that right now.
Okay.
I'm pretty happy with the results. The ratings were pretty good, considering we were opened up against the closing Olympic ceremony.
Wow. We'll be back. Okay, Rachel.
I have nothing to promote but myself and Jamie.
Okay.
We're going to be working on a VR project, and hopefully we will be at the World Fair. I'm hoping that that's our goal, is to get to the World Fair.
July 2020, the World Fair.
That's it. It's a wrap.
It's a wrap.